today on Multisport Media, we have the Ryan of the moment, Mr. Ryan Kempson. How are we doing, dude?
Good, guys. Thanks for having me on. It's nice talking about some racing finally after a year of banging our heads against the wall.
So, Ryan, you've had an incredible start to 2021 with back-to-back Savage wins at both venues and a really good showing in Florida Spartan Series. How have you found the start of the season?
Well, it's really a blast to get back. Doing the Jacksonville Spartan, we're all excited for it, but after actually doing the race, it was like, oh wow, like I forgot this is fun. Like there's excitement behind it. Like I think we all kind of fell in love with training and forgot like how cool racing is. Also realized that it was fit for the race, but there's definitely some aspects that we miss from actually racing, because I've always raced a lot, because of where I live, there's a lot of local races, local Spartans, so I tend to race myself into shape a lot of times. And I've realized like, oh man, like got to get back to actually racing when this stuff actually ramps up and kind of get advantage on everybody. So I kind of did this. I've got this tour going on because all the Spartan races keep getting postponed. The Savage races, because of the venues they're at, farms, kind of local down south in the United States where they allow permitting. And each of the Savage races happens to be next to, like, right near one of my family members that I haven't seen in a year. So it's kind of like this little family tour in the spring I'm going on and hitting up as many of the races as I can. But, yeah, really awesome experience. Savages, they do a really good job of just putting on a good event and designing pretty fun courses. Like, the difference, Spartan races are fun, but I'd always say they're a little bit different than a traditional obstacle course race. And Savage gives you a sense of like OCR Worlds, you know, old Battle Frog. And it feels like an obstacle race, and it's a little bit more fun. Like it's got that fun sense to it and not so serious. So it was a blast.
Yeah, I was talking to Nicole yesterday, actually. She gave me a quick call. And I was like, that Georgia course that you guys race on this weekend, mm-hmm. Forget the obstacles, but the actual terrain is very similar to UK. So we don't have mm-hmm. mountains per se. We just have like some of our courses like St. Clair Luke or Marsden Lodge, where they just go up and it goes down and it goes up and it goes down. And then you might be running through like thick grass or mud or water, or it just reminded me so much of UK racing, that course.
Yeah, that's where I live when I'm not in the mountains and kind of New Hampshire and Vermont, that's the terrain by me. It's just really steep, you know, 50, maybe 100-foot hill, but it's just unforgiving. And a lot of Savage races are kind of in farm fields, pretty flat. There's a lot of open running. Why Woods tends to do really well, and even Uri. But this course is like, we ran, I don't know, a mile until actually Leon got hurt. But basically from there, we bumped into the woods, and that's just kind of my jam. And it's a blast because it's not just like redlining and pinning a pace and a tempo. It's like you kind of have to attack everything, and the efforts go up and down. And for whatever reason, I do well at that.
I was going to say, while we're on Savage, we'll stay on Savage, mm-hmm. because to be fair, at some points I was watching, I hate to mention it, but was watching Matt B. Davis' coverage, or the Savage coverage, I suppose. Mm-hmm. And at some points, Ryan, you were just chatting to the cameraman, like you were just having a complete blast, you know, like at what point did you realize, you know, I can take my foot off the gas a little bit. I don't need to burn myself over. I've got a 2-3 minute head start here.
When I heard Leon got hurt, I knew that he was the only one that could probably, if like I was slow on obstacles, catch me. But like I said, after that first mile, we hit the woods, and the guys, they're only, you know, 10, 20 seconds behind me, which is nothing at the start of a race. But when we hit the first, I don't know, maybe a half a mile through the woods, the gap just increased significantly really quick. And at that point, when you run, and you guys know, when you run those, that type of course, very undulating, steep, technical with good obstacles, once you have a lead, it's very hard for someone to match your efforts hard. Now they have to exceed that effort and try to catch you. So you can kind of run, easier, And by decreasing that effort, you end up running a faster race because you kind of just go smooth into everything. You're not like burning yourself up on some of the little, because those climbs are so short and steep that like if you try to go hard up them, you just gas yourself and then you end up going slower later on.
That's not you, Ryan, is it?
That's me. Hold on, give a sec. I'm in a city right now.
They're not after you though, no?
Yeah, maybe, I don't know.
There we go, they're gone. What I noticed, one thing I noticed is forgetting the running, which obviously was incredible, and your speed on that type of terrain, is how, a bit like Leon, and this is why I'm surprised by the Americans, like the first Savage race you did, which was where was the first one?
Florida.
2 weeks ago. Florida. Everyone was like, oh my God, look how quick Leon does an obstacle, look how flowy he is. And he is, but most pure people in Europe are like that. You know, yes, Leon's good, but most of us Europeans are very good on rigs because that's how we train. Yeah. Whereas you Americans need to be better at running mountains and running awkward stuff. But you, Ryan, for instance, you actually looked like you were flowing really well on those rigs. Like, for instance, Anchor's Way, you know, you're the only one that made it look so bloody easy. Like you skipped one, you just did it easy. Everyone after you, and I don't know if you've seen the footage, literally second, third, and fourth. Fourth, he got there in third. He ended up like 15th because he was there about at least 10 minutes because he just did not have the technique. And I'm sitting there going, how do these people go into a race? They can keep up with Ryan Kempson within reason, but yet they can't do an obstacle that well. Like, it just still baffles me that people don't have the techniques down before they hit these races. Is it because you don't get a chance to train them, or is it generally because you are a much better athlete than they are?
There's that. When I came into the sport, I'm not like, I don't have great upper body strength. Don't have amazing finger strength.
No.
But I never really had an issue. Where I've had an issue is cold. Then the other issue comes up with Spartan is there's such high stakes, and it's always dewy in the morning that like we just don't take risks most of the time, and so you guys don't really get to see how talented some of us are at obstacles. When you have, that's like the great thing about Savage is you can just go for it. I've been working on better finger strength, so I can, because when things are dry I can just blast or anything. I've had trouble when things are damp, but I've improved that. I've been talking to a lot of people. I've had a tendency in the past to lock my grip on like the pad of my palm.
Yeah.
And the problem is when it's wet and that's locked in and it slips, you slip down to your fingertips, and it's hard to catch that. So I've actually been practicing just going just on my fingertips alone and on the rings and just blasting through it like that. But that kind of goes to everything else is that all the other athletes, most of them, even if they do Savages, they're all doing Spartan races. And then there's also the, there's this big training concept over here of like locking off on everything. And locking off on everything doesn't, like, one, you just burn yourself out. And people just don't, it doesn't seem like a lot of people put information out about like, you know, being fluent through things and just kind of having an athletic prowess of swinging. And it's funny, I was actually in the zoo before this with my little nephews and watching the monkeys and orangutans and stuff swing around, and it's like, wow, we're kind of pathetic compared to them.
It's really funny you should say that actually, Ryan, because I've got a little ninja rig in my training facility where we're out at the field, and I've got a training partner. It's a guy that I've sort of taken to a wing to try and help and improve in OCR and stuff, and he's amazing because he comes from a bouldering background.
Yep.
He's amazing in this sort of 90 position lock off hold.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to things like simple things like monkey bars or rings or gibbons or anchors away, he's got no fluidity in his body.
Yeah.
Whereas I'm able to flow, like move my hips, move my body, he's very rigid. And it's amazing that I'm trying to train, like you say, to be a bit more stronger in this position. And I've got to try and train him to try and be a bit stronger in this position. But it's interesting you say that.
I think a lot of people overlook how the lower body plays a role in like kind of your lower abdominal strength and how you move around. And like you can see it when you actually, you know, who's a really good example is Nicole. If you look at pictures of her, like swing through obstacles, like she's very pliable as well. And her feet are like over her head, and all those things contribute to momentum moving forward. You know, if I got stuck in the middle of the rig, I'd probably be screwed too. Like, and that's what, you know, a lot of people get to, and they kind of just get themselves set up awkwardly, and you're kind of toast at that point. But yeah, it's just, that's what I say. Like, I watch people do races, the open heats, and they spend like 2 minutes like hanging, trying to go through a rig. I'm like, I would fall off too.
Yeah.
Opposed to like, well, the 10 seconds I'm on there.
A good example of that was this weekend in Georgia, the girls all at the Savage rig there with the cheese board.
Yeah.
Oh my, I felt so sorry. I mean, there was second, third, fourth, all the way through to ninth, all just sat there being demoralized, going and trying and trying and trying. And you know what it's like, the more you try, the more your grip goes. You know, Alex Walker was trying to rest a grip, but it's just hard work, isn't it?
That cheese board it's a pain in the butt. It's just very awkward, and if you don't like just kind of cruise your way through it, like bends, it flexes, it's that composite material that's super slippery. That presents a pretty big challenge, which is, it's kind of cool.
Yeah But I like that. I like the fact that you've got, sorry, Luke, I like the fact that you've got, you mentioned Spartan not being very big on the obstacle technique and difficulty, but now you've got something that's very similar to a Spartan race terrain-wise, but all of a sudden you've got these actual rigs that change every weekend as well, so you're not always got the same thing.
Yeah, the cool thing about Savage is that they do mix it up, and then their selection of obstacles changes. It's changed quite a bit from you know, the past two races I've done. And they're always kind of adding some new ones, and they're not really hard, but they're obstacles, you know, and they kind of put in your way enough that they take a little bit of technique or just kind of approaching them. And Enoza called me yesterday because he was planning on doing one. He was asking me for some recommendations. I'm like, you know, just make sure you look at them and ask as many questions, because they're not hard, but if you get to it and you don't know what to do, like, or have the technique, you're going to kind of get stuck there or slip off, and, you know, it should definitely will provide a hiccup.
Yeah, definitely. And the silly thing is, like, all of us, you can go on YouTube, Savage have every single obstacle and a technique based on there from, is it Sam that runs Savage? You know, like, you can watch it, you can see it like anyone else can. And I saw Nicole today on her social media, she's saying at chain, yank my chain, she didn't realize she didn't have to get the chain all the way to the top.
It's when you get that full chain off the ground, it is maybe heavier than the Hercules hoist in Spartan.
Love it.
Like, it's not that far, but it becomes really awkward because the first pull is like, and then it just slowly gets heavy. And like, you can't like, it's, I thought it was silly when I first saw it, but then when I did it in a race, I'm like, oh, like this is
quite good.
Something to it.
Ryan, for non-American listeners, how does the flow of a Savage race go? Because you've mentioned a chain there, which is kind of a heavy obstacle. Is there carry obstacles? Is it more technique obstacles? How do they set it out?
Yeah, so it's all technique obstacles. They only have one, I think it's called Lumberjack Lane, where it's like a 4x4 timber that's, I don't know, it probably weighs 20, 25 pounds. It's not heavy at all. The rest of the course is comprised of, you know, they have quite a few like different slanted walls, kind of like Twin Peak type walls, kind of ramp walls. And so it's a mixture of, they always have the Savage rig. Sometimes they have two. They have a Twirly Bird obstacle, which is another rig. They have Wheel World, which is another rig. And they have Anchors Away. So they have anywhere between 5 and 7 actual, like what you consider a rig on course. So lots of upper body. And then they have
Sabretooth as well. Is that a rig?
Sawtooth. Yeah, it's huge. I mean, it's, you know, it's 20 feet up, 20 feet down on monkey bars. So, you know, you can qualify that. And then they just have a bunch of, I mean, even they have a low one with pipes and ladders you have to like shimmy on. So everything is, it's a legit obstacle. None of them are really super hard, but they have like slant walls and warp walls. Nothing really besides a couple of the rigs that you're going to fail, but there's just everything that has some sort of technique base to it. Even they got the scoring hole, which is the medicine ball you got to throw up into a hole, like cornhole. Even that, like, it can, you know, provide some hiccups, but, I guess the big gist is that they have actual technical obstacles rigs. They have a couple fun obstacles, and they have these big, ginormous obstacles too, like very tough mudder essence to it. And it creates, and there's normally there's a good chunk of running to start the race, which sometimes separates the runners. But once you get past the first mile, mile and a half, what's different than a Spartan race, the feel is that if you have equal competition there, is that there becomes a battle and technique matters. There's catching up and there's leads created, and those just diminish depending on your strength and weaknesses. And that's the biggest difference coming from like a Spartan race to that, is that it feels like an actual back and forth race. With Spartan race, it always seems there's some battling, but it always seems like there's a breaking point and someone's just gone, you know?
Yeah.
In Savage race, you don't get that same feeling.
And how does it work in Savage race with obstacle failures?
Completion based. As many attempts as you want. Same thing. They do two timing chips instead of like a band. And if you can't get through that, they take the time chip away from you. You can still continue on with the race. They're as far as like completing obstacles, they don't have this extensive, ridiculous rule book that Spartan does, maybe because there's not as much competition, but they're very much, they're fair about how they assess a race and the rules involved with it. And they're not just going to punch someone with a penalty because they weren't something that never came up.
Who does that?
I don't know.
Random injuries for touching metal bars.
Yeah, but at the same time, they've been putting in new obstacles. So, like, there was another new obstacle at this venue that they didn't put in the pro heat. So they didn't want to set someone up with something they'd never done before. But they make sure we go test it after. The same thing they did with Yank My Chain in Florida. And then they always do a video, if it's a new obstacle, on the rules of what you are allowed or not allowed to do. You know, the day before, they put it up on Facebook. So you have access to understanding, and rather than having to rely on like doing your own research in a rule book that nobody releases, they just show you right there. Like, this is what you can do. This is what you can't do.
To be fair to Spartan, I know we weren't mentioning names, but what I will say is Thomas Blanc, who's the RD in Europe in Spartan, mm-hmm. who you might know, right? He's actually very good at putting out a video before most major events, which US do not do, but I know in Europe they do that. Interesting actually, because obviously since Florida and now Georgia, I've actually got some of the Savage obstacles in my place now.
Nice.
So I'm just waiting for Savage to come to England. I just need it to come to Europe.
Yeah. So the cool about the Savage obstacles is unique is that they use different materials, you know, you get to a lot of the other races and they all seem to be composite materials, some ropes, but Savage, you have towels, you have rope, like literally threaded ropes. And the neat thing about that is when it comes to things being cold or wet, is that they still provide some kind of grip that you, even when they're wet, you can get through. Like a lot of the other races, everything's like plastic. And when it's wet, it's wet. And everybody, like BJ made a good point about it, is that when things are really, really wet, everybody goes through them the exact same way. There's no risk taking. Yeah. There's no technique. There's one technique to get through, and that's it.
Yeah.
So here's my question then, VJ. Here's my question. It's leading on to my question, Ryan, is like you have people like VJ now who are obviously very obstacle. If you were to have a dream wave of Savage, not Spartan, Savage, would you still be coming out on top?
Oh, you mean like top competition?
Yeah. Like if you added your Atkins in there, you know, your VJ, your Woodley, you know, even some Uris and people like that that have been doing these for a long time, do you still think your running quality would still have you as obstacle proficient as they are? I mean, like Aaron Newell, let's prime example of saying, oh yeah, Spartan's too easy. You know, why is Aaron Newell not smashing up these races then as their obstacle races? He's supposed to be the best obstacle. I can say that because I get on with him, so I can take this. But you know what I mean?
Yeah, of course. I think I'd probably, my weakness has always been endurance, and the past basically year and a half off, that's where, well, I guess I've always had, maybe because of the training, maybe because just the skill set I was born with, I've always had the foot speed, but that engine wasn't big enough to last like a whole race, you know, every year it'd extend. You know, so the cool thing at this point is I'm not just hanging on for dear life with the top guys. I can kind of play that game back and forth, and I have something that my engine can kind of put out in the end, towards the end of the race. That's why in the Jacksonville race, I was really bummed. Both
Mate, you should have won that. You should have won that.
I don't know about win. I think it would have been a good battle with VJ, but you know, I wasn't bummed I messed up or my placement. I just was bummed. Like VJ and I were both kind of pulled off and had a lot in our tank going into the tire and knew after that was where the race was. And I just was bummed to miss the opportunity to just, you know, battle head to head and see who came out on top.
That begs a question, Ryan. What are the distances of the Savages? Because we know they got a bit of a longer race and then a bit of a short.
He didn't answer my question. He didn't say if he could beat everyone or not.
Yeah, I can.
Yeah.
I guess I'll follow that up. It really depends on the course. Like if we're in a Florida course, which Florida is really flat, like that hurt me to run with that guy Alvaro. You know, that's going to give Woods and BJ probably somewhat of an advantage. You know, of course, like Georgia probably plays into my hands a little bit more, and like an Atkins or a Newell. But I still think it comes down to, you know, the length of the course and just the terrain you're on. I think that makes the biggest difference in any of these races. But if you're going to put us all on like just a flat, fast course, I'll be there, but you're probably going to have to VJ. That's his jam. Like he can get into that flow of things. Hey, little guy. That's kind of it.
He just came in and went, can you hold MO? Baby? I need to go for a wee.
Of course.
Of course.
We don't have to talk about it, but you can carry on. Sorry,
So what were the distances of the races then, Ryan?
Yeah. So Savage originally, like, it was their regular distance was like a 6 to 8, but it's seeming like they've settled into like 6 miles, like 5.5 to 6 miles, which to me seems like you're still looking at anywhere from a 42 minute to a hour long race, which to me seems like it's long enough that, you know, gives people a chance to come back or play it slow or whatnot, but it's also still pretty fast.
Yeah.
Their blitz is a 5K. It's supposed to be right around 3 miles. And basically with their blitz, they take out a couple like the beginning running section, a couple of the running sections, and put most of the obstacles in it. So if you're
was there a blitz yesterday at Georgia?
There wasn't. So I was saying earlier, Savage only has a pro wave for the blitz right now at their Florida race, which is kind of like their home base, Saturday, Sunday race. Right now, maybe because of COVID, I'm not sure, is that it's just the regular Savage as a pro wave. So there's no actually like competitive wave or money up for grabs at the Blitz currently, besides at the Florida race. I'd imagine they're going to change that once things get rolling again, because the Blitz it's really exciting. I mean, you saw that in Florida, you know, the battle Lee and I had and the girls that's really exciting.
How old is Savage? How long have they been going?
2011, basically since Spartan's been around.
Okay. So
yeah. Yeah. They're just real adamant on, growing slow. They do multi-year contracts with all their venues, and so the Savage races, they actually do a multi-year contract, and those big Colossus obstacles, they build them there out of lumber, and they keep the obstacles there, which again helps to, you know, cut down on cost and time and, you know, production itself. So, you know, they play it safe and smart, and they put on a great race.
No, definitely. It seems like getting more competition over the time. We've seen Yuri Force dominate that race for like the last three or four years. He was like the name. Then, like you said, Woods came along. Now yourself as well, winning a lot of races. They do have probably the best trophy in OCR.
That
is amazing.
Where do you put it?
It's funny getting on a plane with it. Like coming home from Florida, I sometimes like with trophies, like, oh, is that a trophy? The last security check I went through, he goes, you got an axe here. I got to take this to a different security thing. And, you know, by the time they read it, and, you know, a lot of people think it's a firefighter's like competition award. So like, yeah, they're pretty good in the security, just letting things through. The head's just wooden. It's not metal. But yeah, you get some funny looks, especially carrying it around. I always, you know, sometimes if you feel really good about yourself, you'll hold the big checks or the axe facing out so people can see it. But sometimes you just don't want to deal with it. So you turn it inside out. So it just looks like a piece of plywood.
Oh, fair dues. Yeah. But that is a cool, cool trophy to take home. Definitely.
It is. It took me a while to get one. Yeah, over here, that's a gem to have. You get an axe. That's a good deal.
Excellent.
I think I'm going to have to come to just to see if I can get one of those axes. Maybe one that Ryan isn't running at.
You went for a long time.
Yeah.
What's the next race for you then, Ryan?
Next race. What's it? What do we got here? I have a local race called the Fit Challenge. This guy Rob McCoy puts on. It's a fun local one. And then I'm doing the Maryland Savage in beginning of May.
Nice.
And then you guys heard the Hildebrandt race, the battle on the beach down.
I want to talk to you about this. Yeah.
Yeah. So they're
this race.
Yeah, they're small. There's six of us invited. It's a pretty neat format. And if just so everybody knows, there's this battle on the beach with the pros, but there's also regular elite heat and open waves both days. So, you know, definitely if you want to go on a little vacation, like, you know, you guys come out, it's supposed to be a really cool course. It's a, so for the pro battle, it's a mile loop up and down the beach, 20 something obstacles, whatever it may be, 12 obstacles, I'm sorry. And we're doing three laps. So, you know, mile, you know, 5K race, the format, the way it's set up, there's six women, six men invited. We're going to race Saturday morning. The top four advance till Saturday afternoon. They race again Saturday afternoon, and the top two advance to a championship on Sunday. And then also we're doing a team race on Sunday based on seeding, and it's going to be a relay race. Each there's going to be teams of four, I believe. Three or four.
Two guys.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
6, 12. Anyways, we're each do one lap. And
welcome to Multisport Media, mathematics with Ryan.
Quick math.
But yeah, they got some, you know, they got trusses there, so they have some really great obstacles, pretty legit. They contracted my brother to build an obstacle.
As
you know, he's a big, you know, his thing is rewarding athletic ability. That also everybody can get through. So I think he's going to have a pretty cool, I think, I won't tell you what it is, but it's, there'll be jumping involved. There'll be high fly jumping, off some sort of maybe a platform that will, either you're going to get over it really quick or you're going to be crawling up pretty slow. So,
nice.
Yeah, similar to his one in OCR Worlds.
So that format is very similar to what, I don't know if you've, Red Bull do races in the US, do they? So that Red Bull sort of
concept. So they don't do it in the US, I'm sorry, but I've seen what they do what you mean. Over in Europe or whatever.
Would it be in that kind of format, Ryan? Yeah. Are they having some kind of live stream? Because that lends itself very well to watching.
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure. I know they talked about having good coverage. I'm not sure if obstacle racing media is really, you know, Matt Davis is, he's doing all the Savage races this year, which is cool. And he's getting, his setup is getting better and better and trying to iron out like the details. So maybe he'll be there to some extent or try to get some coverage as well. But, yeah, man, we have to show this sport more. I come obviously from kite surfing, and like kite surfing grew rapidly because of a wow factor, people literally flying through the air, like it's wow. And there is a huge wow factor for our sport if seen up close and personal. You know, climbing mountains and stuff is really great, but it's hard to capture that. But you know, what some of the athletes do on obstacles is astounding. And, you know, a lot of the live coverage is great, but you're still seeing it from a far away perspective. We're not getting that up close and really seeing what's going on, what each of the athletes is doing. And I think we got to do a much better job of just showcasing that, and hopefully maybe that will attract more competition to the sport as well. Yeah, so it was a kid I actually trained from the time he was early in high school, baseball player, and he had a passion for videography, and we were supposed to do something just up where I live in the Cape, and he ended up moving down to Florida, and I'm like, hey, I got a couple races down there, like, let's get together and see what we can do. And he did all that coverage by himself with his camera alone. Yeah, he's got some people just have an amazing eye for capturing cool things. And before we did the race, I started sending him like what other people have done, kind of Spartans coverage. And his comment was, he said it's amazing how unexciting they can make something that is so cool look. Like, and it's true. Like, they do, Spartan does everything they can, but a lot of it has to do with the live feed. But we just said, let's start doing this project and seeing if we can just put, like, we did a long kind of like story format with Spartan, and then we did like short, really up close, slow motion zoom, and just trying to get some feedback of like, and it seems like they want the people want something kind of in the middle.
Yeah.
But hopefully we'll get a couple more projects. Our main project is going to be OCR World's short course, which that's my brother's designing that entire course. So we plan on, we want to do a big project for that and really showcase that. So that's that will be really cool in the come fall. But
race can bring a great aspect of you racing against somebody on an obstacle. I think that's a bit of the wow factor from OCR when you're seeing people go ahead, somebody's doing that obstacle, how far they're getting for a rig, kind of flowing. We've missed a lot of media of that, a lot of videos. There's been so many great races and so many great battles. Been and gone, but I'm sure hopefully we'll capture some more.
Yeah. And honestly, I think what it comes down to is for so many years, because of the way the sport was set up, we were very reliant on getting media from the companies and, being showcased through their social media, when I think we really have to kind of put our big pants on as athletes and, invest some money ourselves and do our best to showcase this sport.
And the best thing is, Ryan, things like say, not helpful for the podcast, but things like gimbals and that are getting better now. They are getting more usable for your average person.
They get even cameras and phones as well.
Are pretty phenomenal.
They're amazing.
And they get more affordable.
Yeah.
We've said it for a long time, Luke, haven't we? Like, OCR is definitely, even my place at the field, and even when we're not racing, if I run around there and have someone throw it in my face slow-mo, and you get the lashes and the jumps and you do it, it looks epic. Do you know what I mean? Like, it makes people want to book on and pay and come and play. I was about to say, your video, the slow one of Jacksonville, Ryan, where you're walking and warming up and doing all that sort of thing, it made me want to click more about you. It made me want to find out who you were as an athlete. It made me want to go to your website. Yeah. So, like, as feedback, that it made me more intrigued, and I already know about you. So
That concept came from spending the winter. One of Spartan's main social media guys, who actually has a lot of good ideas that he sometimes gets in the back seat in their company, is Alberto Campos, who he was the one that really pushed, like, listen, like, you guys, we're not all Killian Jornet's where we can put a video of ourselves running on a mountain and people care about it. Like, if you're just showing a run or a race, like, nobody, what is that? It's nothing. Like, you got to start telling stories and people got to get to know you. And, like, that's what people want to see. He came from work, and he actually did a lot of work with, like, Red Bull, with the, I think it was the World Surf League down in South America. And that's what he did. Like, his thing was about, telling the stories of the athletes and working with them. And he's encouraged a lot of us athletes to really pursue this on ourselves and don't rely on Spartan, don't rely on our sponsors. Mm-hmm. Like, be the one that brings this content. And, and the one thing I have to say is it's kind of tough because when I have my friend coming to a race and I got a filmer on me, it does seem a little selfish and kind of self-centered, but I just convincing myself, and I'm hopefully convincing my other people and the athletes that it's not about, hey, I'm getting video myself. It's about, hey, let's do everything we can to capture this, to share and build this community and build this sport. Like, we got to do our part.
I mean, to be fair, Ryan, from the person, from knowing you, from how I know you, mm-hmm. you don't come across to me as like, look at me, look Good. At me. Do you know what I mean? Like, no, we know you're a pretty down to earth, cool guy. You know, you are doing mm-hmm. it for the sport. I mean, we had this conversation, nearly a year ago, would you believe, about the contract with Spartan. We sat and talked about that mm-hmm. on a podcast. And the thing is, like, you're still right. You know, we don't do enough. And me and Luke have had this in the UK. I mean, you're lucky. You live in the US, mate, where you've got Matt B. Davis talking to you every 5 seconds.
I know.
Here in the UK, I mean, Leon is a great example. Leon mm-hmm. and Nikolai in Denmark, they've done a really good job of self-promotion themselves. Mm-hmm. I mean, in Denmark, it's probably a little bit different because they've got that, they've got the European side of things. In England, we're even smaller down in a hole. You know, like mm-hmm. me and Luke trying to promote ourselves, it's hard, which is why we came out with a podcast, because we thought if we get people to know us, then they look. But then they just like, oh, it's the podcast guys. Yeah, they do
no,
podcasts.
No, like, it was the Spartan guys.
We're the Spartan guys. Yeah, that's it. We're the Spartan guys. Because that's the only race we do, apparently. But yeah, so it is difficult. But like, I know what you're saying, like, to be on the start line with a camera on you, mm-hmm. it might come across like that. But from our side of things, no, we 100% get what you're saying.
Yeah. And it just comes like, we got to do it ourselves. And like, if we want to get into that, like, if we filter down, it's like the contract talks is that a lot of people like join the pro team. And a lot of it has to do with the opportunity to get on their social media, the opportunity to get on this. And, you know, let's not rely on them to do that, because that just gives them a stranglehold on the industry, which is it's not good for them, it's not good for us, it's not good for other brands. Like,
as we are seeing now, this is a stupid thing, you know, like, yes, okay, we've had COVID, but actually we're seeing now that the reason media isn't very good at these races, because it has been run by mm-hmm. X, Y, and Z, or run badly by X, Y, and Z. Yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe like every other sport, like table tennis, for God's sake. If I go on Red Bull TV, there's everything other than OCR. And I can't wait for the day when I'm scrolling across from Red Bull TV and I see OCR there.
There's every parkour,
table tennis, great dancing.
It's a couple.
Yeah, but they haven't got their own dedicated playlist yet. Do you know what I mean? Like, kite surfing is another big one. And I'm not even into kite surfing, but I look at that and I go, fuck it, that's
wow.
impressive.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's, we got to do our job, because that's the problem with one brand becoming so large, is that it's not the brand, it's the sponsors they bring in, and they suffocate everybody else. And like, we have to do a good job of getting our own sponsors. Like, I talk to athletes about this all the time, is that, you know, from day one, before anybody even knew who I was, I wasn't afraid to ask for money or ask for support or support my journey. And, you know, there's a lot of no's. There's a lot of no's and a lot of like no responses to emails. But people want to see people go on a journey, whether that's the journey to become a world champion, or that's a journey to become just fit, or to get off the couch. And, you know, people will support that. And it takes you got to put on those pants and not be afraid to ask, you know. Yeah, and I think that'll do the sport better.
Mm-hmm. Companies, albeit more in America, that are teaming up with OCR mm-hmm. athletes. There's a few in Europe that are getting bigger as well. So there's companies that do want to team up with OCR athletes. Just maybe takes a lot of time to kind of contact, put out good content, and to build relationships.
The relationship is huge, and that's the biggest one for me. And that's where I had the hardest time with the Spartan contracts, is that like a lot of it has to do with getting financial support from their sponsors, but you're basically just getting money from them. You're not really developing a relationship with the brand itself, which long term hurts everybody. You know, it doesn't accomplish what it's like, you know, just you're paying to play and that's it. You know, and it doesn't long term, it's not great.
Right, I'm going to go to a place that you're not going to like me going to, Ryan. You don't talk about this very often.
Okay.
But, I mean, we've had you on before and we've talked a little bit about training before.
Mm-hmm.
We all know you're very much, obviously, like you said before, you alluded to, you know, you didn't have the endurance. You've always been lucky enough that you've had that, the leg speed. Mm-hmm. You know, we all know your brother. You know, you're a very competitive family. By the way, you need to go and kick your brother's ass in those train to hunt competitions. I think you'd be a laugh if you just turned up and beat him. Although he's doing very well. We know that competition's there. And now I listened to when you were racing, I think twice now, I've listened to both commentaries and people have said, well, this is Ryan Kempson. You know, we all know he doesn't train as much as every other athlete. And we all know those. I'll tell you what I was listening to. I'm going to mention another podcast just because I can. The Running Public.
Mm-hmm.
And he was mentioning about Spartan, Florida, about the mud and the water and the fact that you were so good at getting through the water and mud because you were actually very good at pulling up and not having the downward force in, on the running, but the upward forces. And then he started talking about that's because all your water running you do and water work. Now, I know you're big into Cruz Elite and you're big into Podenco method and all that sort of stuff because that stuff, that blows my mind. I love it all. What I really want to know from you, Ryan, is that all really true? Do you just do a lot of water work, a lot of Podenco method, barely any running, and you are still quite good? Or are you secretly not putting on Strava, Ryan Atkins-style workouts and just not telling us?
No, it's all true. So, again, there's always some sort of, like, God-given gift, and a lot of it actually has to do just my childhood. Like, this is so silly, but when I was a kid, like, I literally grew up on the side of a mountain building forts, and when I would, like, I took pride in, like, running fast through the woods and being able to pick my feet up over things. So there's actually a book called The Sports Gene by David Epstein, and it has to do with, like, genetics. The premise of it really is, like, what are genetics, and that a lot of our capabilities, yes, size, height, you know, some raw abilities are God-given, but a lot of the things that we interpret as genetic ability has to do with our experiences, childhood, growing up. So I was fortunate enough to have a base of just, you know, running through the woods, doing construction, building things, just kind of, you know, being strong. So that I had a decent foundation. But yes, my volume each year has increased, some years 50%, some years 80%. But it is still about, my yearly volume is, I think it's roughly 35 to 40% below with, like, what, like, an Atkins puts in. And if you look at, like, my total run count or run mileage compared to, like, Woods, his is like 25,000 and mine is like 4,000. So, like, it's, yeah, my volume is still way below. Each year, the engine improves, the more volume I put in. So that's always key. But I was fortunate enough, coming from injury, not coming from endurance, is that understanding that a healthy body is better than a beat-up body, right? And when you look at the mechanics, like, running mechanics aren't complicated. Like, you can break it down all you want, but it has to do with having great pelvic position and stability and picking your damn feet up off the ground. Those should, like, be two things, and driving power from your hips.
He makes it sound so easy.
Yeah. So all the Cruz Elite stuff I do, all the water running specifically, is when you're in the water, there's no, you're not in contact with the ground. So movement has to come from somewhere, and it comes from your center of mass, or in the water considered center of buoyancy. Which when I first started training in the water, and I think I had just started getting into a little bit of running, is the first thing that I noticed, besides feeling great after, is that when I was running after, is that all of a sudden I naturally started standing upright and naturally just felt this force driving through my hips. And when it comes to technical, muddy, water, nasty running, that's where the force comes from. You can't rely on just a quick turnover or momentum moving forward or planting your feet and driving through with your hamstrings. Like, it has to do with having a great center of balance and, you know, deriving power through your hips, which is your center of mass. Like, no matter what type of work you're trying to do, you're trying to move something, like, you don't push something from the edge, you push something from the center of mass, and that's the most efficient way to move something unless you're looking at a lever. But even those levers, a lever attaches to the center of mass of whatever you're moving. So if you can control that and be efficient in that area, it's gonna, you know, now it's not gonna make you a world-class athlete, but if you pair that with increase in volume, all right, and doing very specific, race-specific work and be ready for a race, all those melded together are gonna allow you to perform the best. And that's where, for me, the races I go to, I've had the ability to perform probably at my peak potential. Okay. And early on, it was do what I can to stay healthy, taper, and just be specifically ready for whatever that race is, whether it's quick foot speed or throwing a weight vest on for a big race like Big Bear, and being really good at power hiking, being good at transitions. And over the past 2 years, it's transitioned from, all right, being really specific at something to building that engine and having the endurance to run with the top athletes, which is kind of funny because it's opposite of how, like, I approach coaching an athlete. Like, a lot of times, yes, we'll do specific stuff, but the first thing when you coach is you want to develop a base and consistency and health. But I was able to accomplish that with the pool. Because of how well fast I'm able to recover.
So basically, you're doing it the right way. It's just the slow, patient way that eventually you actually, what's interesting, and this is true to the word, you're going to improve and get better each year because the way you are training. Does that make sense? Like, yes, okay, Atkins and people like that. I'm not saying you train differently, but all I'm saying is those guys that appear to be like doing well, Atkins does. Atkins, I mean, he's a machine, but I use him example because 1 minute he'll be cycling up, you know, somewhere ridiculous. The next day he's like running 50,000 miles and not worrying. But not every average person could do that. But what you're saying, Ryan, is actually if I want to be able to do that, I realize that I need to be, you know, maybe 2 or 3 years down the line and I need to do this each year and improve it.
Yeah.
The best, what's really interesting is when you finally do get, you might be better because you've got all that health and benefit and the water and the Burdenko method stuff. You know, you're going to be healthy as well as being quick and not just quick and unhealthy.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
It does. And sorry to, like, at the same time, like when I first started racing, I had to like just kind of bang my head against a wall and get out there to figure out what I was capable of doing. And then I could step back and like, all right, I definitely have the ability to race at this level.
Yeah.
Let's increase it. But again, like obstacle racing is really unique in the sense that like you can have the biggest base in the world, but it's still not like racing is a whole different monster because you race so hard.
But that's what I love about it. Don't you love it? Me and Luke always say this. The stupid thing is, right? It's not like a triathlon where you know exactly what distance, exactly what you're going to be on. You know, OCR, not always the fastest, not always the sexiest and the prettiest win. Do you know what I mean? Like sometimes the ugly, slow ones do win. They do win. I win all of them. But do you know what I mean? And that's what I love about the sport. And you mentioned at the very start of this podcast, Ryan, you know, you now have done a few or four races. Me and Luke haven't done one yet. And I just know whether we come first or we come 21st. I know as soon as we finish that race, we're going to be having the biggest smile on our face. And we're going to go two things. We're going to go, we miss that, like massively miss it. But also we're going to walk away and we're going to go, I now know I need to be here and I'm here. Or I'm... shit, I've actually overachieved and won that race and I thought I was here. So, and I love that feeling. And that's why we're in such an amazing sport.
It is. It's unique. But
Brian, before we quickly move on, you seem to have a better understanding of that it's going to take time to achieve that progression. Yeah. You see a lot of athletes want instantaneous kind of
gratification,
progression and stuff. But with that in mind, what is your ultimate goal within the sport? Is it to be a world champion? Is it the 3K?
He wants to be 90 still racing. That's what he wants to be.
Yeah, it could be. But is there an ultimate goal?
You know, the ultimate, I'd love to win a world championship. you know, whatever discipline that be. I think this, I've always been, no matter what sport I played, always been diversely athletic, and I want to be good at like everything. And I don't want to be the one that just spends 8 months training for a world championship to win just that. Like I want to be there and just compete. Like I enjoy the competition, but I think if you really, really boil it down to like why I continue to race, why I keep pushing is, besides that it's fun and I love it, is coming from the hip injury. Like I was told by the surgeon, you should never run again, blah, blah, blah. All right. I feel better than where I train. And part of it for me is being introduced to something I was not good at. Like I was not good at endurance. I had the obstacle thing and the toughness part of that and the grit and pushing really hard. Mm-hmm. But for me, it's like, I just want to find out how far I can push my body and what it's capable of. And, you know, I've been lucky to this extent of having coaches and mentors with Taylor Crews and Igor Bodenko and Tom Barbeau and a lot of just basketball coaches who have shared resources and knowledge and philosophies to allow me to continue to progress. Because, you know, I want to find out what I'm capable of. At the same time, like my fitness keeps getting better and better. I get stronger and stronger and faster and faster. And until that stops, like I'm going to keep going. Ignorance is bliss, I guess. And, you know, even before I had surgery, when I got into the sport, I said, I'm more athletic than these guys. I'm better than these guys. And it's not like a cockiness. I just have an ignorance of believing that like I can do whatever I want. And I know that that's thrown around a lot, but like deep down, it's just kind of ingrained that I have, I don't know if it's a drive or willpower or, maybe I'm just an idiot. I don't know.
Yeah. Are you a better OCR racer than you are a kite surfer?
Yeah. I am. I mean, if you just look up Red Bull King of the Air, I am beginner at best at kite surfing. Okay. Beginner at best. And you know, I always get better, but, kite surfers, the pro kite surfers, it's that the sport is big enough and it's been around long enough that kids are kiting from the time they're like 8, 9, 10 years old. And it's just literally instinctual for them. And they're, you know, the worst girl on the pro scene of kite surfing is 8,000 times better than I am.
Yeah,
there's no comparison at all.
But you know, in a couple of years when OCR gets to that level, that we're going to have young kids come through on OCR courses that, yes, they're not going to have that endurance that an old athlete's got, but they will have that skill set on the obstacles.
Yeah. 100%. You're starting to see it with some young kids. There's a group on the East Coast. I think they're young, like middle school, early high school. I think they have an Instagram called like East Coast OCR, and it's a group of like 10 of them, and they're all young. And I saw a couple of them at the Savage race, and like they're busting through the rig and not muscling, like swinging, lacheting. And it will be interesting. I think it's still going to take some time because the sport isn't set up enough with, you know, there's plenty of coaches, but I don't think there's enough knowledge out there.
Yeah.
Readily available. You know, there's still, you know, if a kid wants to get into the sport and even if they're in for a while, they're still going to train too hard too often. You know, they're not going to do the endurance stuff. And the truth is it's like everybody's familiar. Most people are familiar with CrossFit with like Matt Frazier being the most dominant athlete ever. It's because he had years of a foundation of powerlifting and Olympic weightlifting.
Yep.
And, you know, the skill set matters in the sport, but if beyond like the short sprint courses, this isn't Ninja Warrior, and these kids have to set up a foundation of endurance and movement skills and not just carry around heavy sandbags and, you know, do high intensity stuff all the time. Like they need proper guidance in order to establish themselves just as a well-rounded athlete first. And then when they get to, you know, probably, you know, 19, 20 years old, then start getting specific. But that's the one thing I do worry about is seeing a lot of these kids training is that what's going to happen in 5-6 years from now? You know, are they going to be that kid that was really good at sports when he was a kid because he was very specific and really not have the fundamental skills and foundation to continue that progress? I work with when the ball sport athletes I work with, I specialize in working with kids from the time they're 10, 11, 12 years old and setting foundations. So this isn't me just spitting off a cuff. It's something I've seen and progressed kids through. And like, we need to have that foundation and keeping it fun for them and move them up through the chain. When you Olympic weightlift as a 15-year-old, you don't touch weights, you know, you lift a bar and you get really good at it. You need to have that in the sport as well.
100%.
Definitely. Even on the Joe Rogan podcast, Matt Fraser was talking about when he first got into Olympic weightlifting, he was lifting a flexi bar or some kind of very small light thing to get the technique over and over and over again. That's why he's so good.
How many other podcasts are we going to mention on this podcast today?
I know, right?
Get all out there.
Not really. There's a few like obstacle gyms, but their foundation is probably more around like Ninja Warrior. There's very far and few between. Like, there's a couple, but there's no opportunity to go do like an actual obstacle course, really, besides just a couple indoor things. In the Northeast, I know of one near me that's like kind of like Spartan focused, and I know one that's like a couple ninja gyms down in a couple cities, but that's the other challenge with our sport is we're doing something that you can't do all the time, and until that changes, like it's only going to grow so much, you know, until you're not having to pay $200 to register to do a race that you're kind of intimidated by. You know, there needs to be that talked about this with my fiance all the time, is that like basketball, you go out to the park and you shoot hoops, you know, football, soccer, you're on a field, you buy a ball in the store and you can be introduced to it. In OCR, what do you got to pay a gym membership? You have to have somebody to invite you there. You have to join a class. There's not like in the park, a course you can go around and play around on, you know, and be intrigued by it.
Yeah, there's a few places in Europe, specifically like Scandinavia, and they have actually got like obstacle course, like in a park, like a free one. You can just run around. It's crazy that they're springing up now and it's actually becoming a thing. But it'd be great to see them more widely available. But even just thinking about like Savage, a very technical race. Yeah.
Yeah, it would be really nice to see that. And who knows, maybe we were on the progression for that, but COVID interrupted all of that, unfortunately. So I think so.
Of life with racing started again in the US and obviously in the UK soon. Well, we won't take too much more of your time then, Ryan. Was there anything else you wanted to go through before we said goodbye? Where can we see any more of these projects, these video projects or other things?
On my social media, see some stuff. There's some cool news coming out with some shoes coming up.
Okay.
Is it super secret?
It's not super secret anymore. If you wanted to do some digging, I believe there may be an article or ad running in Trail Running Magazine with some new shoes from BJ.
You have to impress me, BJ. Right, hold on, stop it there. let's start again because Luke is very much on the VJ train, right? He's very much a VJ man. I'm a minimal runner. I like minimal shoes, okay? So I need a VJ, if they're ever going to bring one out, that's minimal. So please tell me they've got big toe box and they're minimal.
So I can't say everything, but, you know, I came from a minimal shoe. I ran in Vivo shoes. So,
okay.
And the thing with VJ shoes is, to this point, it's not really because they were comfy or matched what we needed. Our, for us Americans, did not have a wide toe box. But the grip and the performance of the shoe in a race, just like that was a selling point. Like, there's just nothing that compares to it. So I can talk about one shoe that's going to be released in the next couple of weeks. It's their Ultra, which I was not really excited about. It's kind of it's more of like a long distance type shoe. But what they've changed is, and I've been running it, it's my training shoe now. I've been running in it for about a month and a half now. It is actually comfortable. It's amazing. So they've changed their foam to, I think it's called like an EV foam. So in the past, the foam for the VJ shoes, like, the best thing you could say about it is, if you're running a 100-mile race, that thing's going to feel the same from mile one to mile 100. But it's going to be pretty rigid. The new EV foam is, I'm not an expert on it, but it's a very similar to a Hoka feel. So it's a thicker foam, but it's pliable and flexible, and it gives you a really good ground feel. The proprioception kind of comes up through it, and I really love that. And it's got a wide toe box and a wide forefoot in general. So it's the first time these shoes you put on, and you can run on the pavement, hard packed. Still same grip. They also have like added kind of like a rocker to the shoe. And I didn't think that was a big deal until I wore it and then I put like the Maxes back on and realized how much they kind of feel just flat and they don't roll at all. So this is the first time, and the best way I've described to VJ is that it's the first time I've had a shoe from VJ that I would feel confident I could go to like a trail runner and be like, hey man, like, try this out, and they'll like it. It's an incredibly comfortable shoe, fits your foot better. It will fit us Americans, and still have, it's thicker, but has still like a ground feel. It everybody, I think, is going to be super shocked of
what they're calling it.
The upgrade. Right. This one's the Ultra.
It's called the
maybe,
Ultra.
There may be some others coming.
Have you got one there? Have you got one there?
I don't have it with me, but I could show you guys real quick.
Yeah, no one else can see it. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Bright pink. So, what?
Yeah. 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 So, and this shoe, I was not really excited for it because I knew it was kind of like a bigger stack shoe, and I like a more minimal shoe.
Yeah.
And it shocked me. Like, I was not expecting to like it, and it made me smile.
Maybe smile. That's a reason to buy the shoe. Maybe smile.
Maybe smile. So, yeah, it's exciting. It's nice seeing a company put the effort into developing something specific for the sport.
Yeah, so I actually remember.
I think a lot of people will be happy.
Yeah, they were in Tahoe a couple of years ago. I remember, and they were going around a lot of athletes and asking them what they thought. And there was a guy literally just writing notes. I was like, "That's interesting. They're actually they are bothered about the guys that are wearing their shoes." You know, about
yeah,
what they're.
So they literally took all the complaints of the previous shoes and what we wanted, and they put that into a couple shoes coming out.
Sweet.
And there's always going to be more things that people don't like, but they address the issues at hand and improve them. And that's all we can ask.
They're a good company. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. 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 Great stuff.
Ryan, thank you very much. We won't take any more of your time.
Thanks for your time.
Yeah. Thanks, guys.
Best of luck.
Congrats on the win again this weekend.
Yeah. It's exciting to get, like, you know, the excitement and buzz around the sport. I think we all know, like, we could only talk about so much for a year. You know, it's just, you know, racing's back, and hopefully we just all get back to it and start promoting it and, you know, just continue this buzz and, you know, just let the sport grow, grow together, you know.
And hopefully me and Luke will see you in December. Oh. Hopefully.
December. Yeah. Abu Dhabi?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I got to get a...
You got to be winning it, right?
I got to get a flight out there. It is. It is gonna be. Are you guys are not going to come to OCR Worlds?
Maybe because of restrictions.
Probably not this year.
Yeah. It's a bummer. I understand it. You know, that's why I haven't gone the past 2 years to Europe. It's, you know, a lot of everybody over there said, it's like, oh, these, like, I've never been scared of it. I do better at those races, but it's just the travel and the cost. It's tough. You know, it's a big challenge.
Next time you're in Europe, Ryan, let us know and we'll happily put you up, mate. And we'll take you around the UK scene.
I appreciate it, guys. Yeah. I would love to make it out there. Thomas Blank is he always pushes me to come out to some of these races. So
hopefully
the schedule opens up at some point and can make it work.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, boys. Great chatting. Nice catching up.
Thanks, Ryan.